Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Georgie Jorgensen. And our guest today is Bill Berggren from the Berggren Law Offices. Bill, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Hello. Glad to be here.
Bill, our topic today is patents, and you've spent your whole career dealing with them, but not always as an attorney. You are an engineer by training initially, and then went to law school later in life. Can you give us a little background of your experience with patents up before the time you were an attorney? Let's start there.
Okay. I was a chemical engineer out of Cornell University in New York. Went to 3M as my first and only company. Stayed there with them for almost 30 years. The first 20, I was an engineer in different divisions. I've got about 6 patents to my name at 3M. And once you've gone through the patent process, you see the world differently. You see the world as, I have a solution. Is that solution unique? Is it unobvious? It's just a different perspective.
And the patent process that we're going to discuss today is about retaining and owning the right to an exclusive invention of some type that's granted by the U.S. Patent Office. But
yes,
your unique background means that you were actually inventing these products and you were working with them, and then you were a patent liaison as well?
Right. 3M has a practice of taking engineers that know the technology and training them in patent law to be patent agents or patent liaisons. These are staffed in the laboratories to help other department heads and other scientists devise patents that are commercially valuable, and then work with the patent attorneys in the law office to craft patents. I've written parts of over 100 patent applications in my time as a patent liaison at 3M.
Oh my! So they've got a whole department that's just protecting the rights to the things that they've designed and
3M
and invented.
Is a very savvy patent company. They have over 40 patent attorneys alone. They typically file between 500 and 1,000 patents each year.
My goodness, that's a lot.
Big ideas.
I'm particularly interested in this 10 or so years that you were a patent liaison. Now, does that mean you were doing research, you were doing writing? What all was involved in that, Bill?
Basically, during those 10 years, I was not doing research. I was working with the inventors to help them arrive at more commercially valuable inventions, and then to prioritize those inventions to see which ones were commercially useful for 3M to patent. I was assigned to the 3M Process Technology Lab. We had about 110 engineers with about 5 or so different major technologies. And it was fascinating to learn the technologies from the engineers as I helped them arrive at inventions that were not only solving their problem, but were designed to be big enough to protect others from designing around it.
So then you were hands-on involved in writing up the description of the process or the product?
I was involved, first of all, in defining and helping the attorneys draft claims that were the property rights that we wanted to have the patent cover, and then draft the examples that would illustrate the invention and review the application that the attorney would draft.
So this was the verbiage that helps describe what it is that you're trying to protect.
Right, because according to the patent law, the government will give you limited monopoly of typically 16, 17 years of time to prevent others from making, using, or selling your invention or importing it in exchange for your disclosing to the public how to make and use your invention.
Now, as part of what you did with the liaison work, was it finding out which of those inventions were actually viable or had patents already on them or similar enough? Did you find many of those where it wasn't unique?
Actually, my job was not to do the searching. That was the job of the inventor, to know their technology and know their area.
Okay.
My job was to, for example, they invented a adhesive that worked on glass. And I would say, well, does this adhesive work on metal or other things? Is it affected by temperature, hot and cold? Are there other properties of it? Trying to broaden the sandbox of what the invention was. They would then go back and do more experiments and say, yes, we can do this and this and this.
Okay.
It was broader than what their initial problem that they were trying to solve. But it showed the breadth of what they could do in their invention. We'd also search the art, sometimes going out to Washington, D.C. and going through the stacks of patents there under technology that are... The patents are categorized in Washington, D.C. by technology. And you might have a patent listed seven or eight times in shoeboxes that you go through.
There's our government for you, Sam.
There's a database search you don't want.
You can also search electronically, but some areas are not easy to search. For example, machines that are very dependent on the figures, or processes that are dependent on the figures. Figures cannot be searched electronically very easily at this point. So you want to see them image. And that involves actually thumbing through shoeboxes of patents to look at images.
My goodness. So, Bill, you've really had a lot of experience in this as an engineer. You've invented and you own some patents as a liaison. You went through the process of helping the attorneys process those applications, and then you graduated from law school and you set up your practice and you focus on intellectual property. And patent seems to be the strongest form of protection available for intellectual property. Now, can a business patent anything?
No. By statute, patents are only available for machines, articles of manufacture, compositions of matter, or methods of making or using. And there's been a lot of lawsuits, as you can imagine, over the last 100 years, defining exactly what these property rights are and how you get them, because the property can be very valuable. You have the rights to exclude competitors from making or using or selling or importing into the country that you have the patent in for the life of the patent.
Hmm.
So from a business owner's standpoint, if he falls into one of those criterias, then you have to make sure that you have something unique, something that isn't already patented, something that you want to try to protect before you go down the patent
road.
That's
true. What a patent basically has to be something that is unique, not known to the public, and not obvious. And not obvious can be a very challenging argument to make, because the patent examiner will combine two seemingly unrelated patents and say, well, what you have is in both of these. And you have to try to persuade them that it's not obvious for one of ordinary skill in the art to combine those two. And that's where the back and forth comes in.
Well, Bill, are there different kinds of patents?
There are four different kinds of patents. A utility patent is the broadest. That's for the machine, composition of matter, method, and articles. The second one is a design patent. That's for the appearance. It's not a copyright now. This is just the appearance of it. It's a picture, a printed matter, a card, for example, playing card, okay. A vase, the picture of it, or the bottle, a Coke bottle, for example.
So the shape, the design.
The shape and design.
Color.
You're patenting that appearance.
So is there a patent for that old Coca-Cola bottle that everybody knows, has seen?
I believe there is.
I'll bet there is, because it's pretty
distinctive.
Unique.
At least
distinctive.
The earlier Coke bottle. Now the
early one,
the
yes.
Plastic ones now are, they're generic.
Sure.
But the third one is a plant patent. And you can patent plants that are not reproduced by seeds.
What would be an example of that?
Orchids. Some gardeners that are making unique orchids will patent their orchid.
So these are hybrids that they're patenting? Or?
They're patenting hybrids that they create by blending different different things to create an orchid. The fourth one is a provisional patent. Provisionals are, it's not really a true patent, it's more a subset of the utility patent, where you file, you send in a description of your invention, and it's never looked at by the examiner, and it's stored for a year, and then it's thrown away. It gives you a date of when you did the invention. And then you must follow up within that 12 months with an actual application.
So it's kind of a preliminary protection to start the clock running, and then you send in the formal description and application during that year?
Yes, it is.
Interesting. A little prior protection, Sam.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
You did see that coming, didn't you?
He's an attorney. He's
a provisional doesn't have any rights. It just says that you did it before somebody else. So if someone else later files an application, say 6 months later on the same invention, you can say, no, I was there first because I have a provisional date. If you disclose it to marketers to see if they want to market it, or manufacturers if they'll license it from you, they can't say, I don't want to license this, and then go off and make it, because you have record that on this date you actually invented it. It was your invention. Mm-hmm. But it has no rights as far as property that a patent would have. So it just shows that you had the invention in your mind by a certain date, and then you told other people about it afterwards.
Now, is that an expensive filing?
It's a very inexpensive filing. It can be, but it shouldn't. For the provisional. It can be, but it shouldn't be. Because you're only protected for what you disclose. Now, you have not done any claims. You probably have not done any search. So, therefore, you're writing down something that when you talk with people, the idea evolves. And it very easily evolves beyond what you talked about, and there's no protection of that. So, before you know it, you're disclosing your invention that was not covered by the provisional. That's very dangerous. Also, from a negotiation standpoint, if you're asking a manufacturer to license your invention, you really are giving him nothing other than, this is my idea. I believe I'm the first, but I don't know. I've done no search. But if you trust me and believe that I am the first one and pay me money, great. Most won't do that.
Most of them want to wait until you get an actual patent.
Then. Most want you to do a search and draft an application that has claims, that you have some idea of what the property is that you believe you're entitled to.
Now, when it comes down to doing that, you call it a claim or an application. How drawn out is that process? How expensive is that process? How much time does it take?
A patent typically takes 4 to 8 weeks to draft. Depends on whether the invention has been reduced to practice, you actually have a working model, or whether it's just a concept, an idea that you haven't shown works. But from when you've reduced it to practice, made it work, a working prototype, it takes about 4 to 8 weeks. I have seen patents written in 2 or 3 days because you're going to go to a trade show and you have to get something done. And that's a case where you might want a provisional, because you'll draft the application with the claims, put as much text as you can in it, file the provisional, and then follow up with the application as soon as you can. But it protects your disclosure to the trade show from disclosing to the public, because once you disclose the invention, two things happen. A clock starts, and you have 12 months to file a U.S. application, or you are barred from filing an application. After that 12 months.
Okay.
You also lose all rights to filing an application outside the United States, because most other countries are what they call absolute novelty countries. If it's known to the public, you can't get a patent. So if you disclose it to the public outside of a non-disclosure agreement, or before you file the provisional, then you lose your international rights and a clock starts. So for that reason, you may want to file a provisional just to have the rights. Another case is you may have disclosed this to somebody else, and you have 12 months to file an application. A provisional could be within that 12 months, but you would want to write that within with as much detail as a patent application would have, and then just finish it off as far as disclosure. So there are issues about disclosure that and dates that may cost you your patent rights if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, in the case of an entrepreneur, we've invented some kind of product. Typically, at that point, they're looking to find some investors to raise some capital and bring this product to market. If that person talks to these investors before they file a patent application, are they losing some rights at that point?
They're not losing rights if they have a non-disclosure with the investors. Many investors, however, do not sign non-disclosure agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Or they might be dishonest and just take the idea.
They're better off filing the application.
Also,
then
you have more negotiating rights or opportunities if you have gone through the money and expense and time of doing the search, having the claims drafted, having an application written up, so they can see more than what your invention is, what you believe your claims are that are yours to keep others from doing.
Okay, now you've said it several times, doing the search. I'm assuming that means that you search other existing patents so that when you make your application, you're sure that your description of what you're filing is unique enough that it won't interfere with the other patents that have already been granted. Is that right? Is that what you're talking about with the search?
That's what I'm talking about. Patents are considered to be public literature because they've been published. The problem is less than 1% to 5% of the patented articles ever see the commerce. Most of them are just patents that never go anywhere. So there's a lot of literature that you don't see in commerce, but is known to the public according to the patent laws.
Mm.
So you have to have a search on this. There are search firms that will do searches on the patent database electronically. I personally use a person who is a retired examiner from the patent office. He knows the system, and he's come back with references between 6 and 12 that are close to what the invention is I give him as a description, and they've been pretty close. When the examiners have then examined the application, they have rarely come up with art that is very different from what this person has found. But others do equally well in their searching.
Sounds like that's a good place to go. One of the former examiners that were granting patents,
yeah,
they certainly should know
get
what
the
they're
edge.
Doing. Now, we started talking a minute ago about the expense. If you're filing a patent application, how much does that cost, Bill?
Typically, a search will cost $800 to $1,000. An application will cost between $6,000 and $7,000 to draft. There may be a draft person for the figures. The filing fees right now, if you're a small entity, less than 400 people, it's $545. If it's filed electronically, it's about $480 or so. There's a discount there. And the prosecution typically might take $2,000 of time.
Prosecution meaning the time it takes for the U.S. Patent Office examiners to process the application?
No, and I apologize for using art terms. When you send the application in, it's assigned to an examiner, and the examiner, by law, is required to give all possible reasons why you should not get a patent. So you'll get a response from him that says, you're not novel because of this patent. And even if you were novel, you're not obvious because of this patent combined with that patent. And giving different details. And you have to respond to all these details. This response is a prosecution. And the back and forth, one back and forth, might cost $2,000 of time to draft the response. This might go on one or two more times.
So you have the opportunity to debate and clarify your application with the examiner to try to get your patent through.
Yes, you do. The examiner might also be very hard-headed and resistant to your well-reasoned arguments, I like to think.
There's a surprise.
And you may feel that you have to go to an appeal. appeals cost more time and more money. But that's rarely used. You may want to refile the application as a continuation in part, adding new factors to it that weren't disclosed earlier, and then alter your claims. There's different strategies back and forth on how to argue why, what kind of claims you feel that you're entitled to versus what the examiner wants to allow. But after this, it takes about between 3 and 4 years for this process to work its way through the system. And then, if you're successful, you get a patent issued.
And then that patent's good for how long?
The patent is good currently for 20 years from when you first filed. So if it takes 4 years to prosecute, is 16 years left, you have 16 years of life. If it took 3 years, you have 17 years of life. But you only have patent rights to prevent others from using your invention once the patent is issued. That's when you have defined rights. Until then, they're prospective rights.
Once they're issued, is there anything you have to do to maintain the patent during that period?
When you issue it, you pay an issuing fee of about $700, I believe, and a publication fee, perhaps, if it was published during the process. They typically now publish applications within 1.5 years if you're going to file outside the United States. If you're not, you can request that they not publish until they issue, in which case you don't pay that fee and you just pay the issue fee.
Who publishes? Is that the patent office?
The patent office does. And then the patent office has a maintenance fee at the 4 years, 7 years, and 11 years. Or 4, 8, and 12, I guess it is. And then it rises on the order of like 500, 1,000, 2,000 for each of these times. The idea being that when you're in the marketplace for a longer time, it's more valuable and you can afford more. Oftentimes, companies like 3M will reconsider at each of these maintenance times whether to abandon the patent or pay the issue fee or maintenance fee.
Is there any opportunity to extend the patent beyond that 20-year period?
No.
Oh, when that's done, then a competitor can come in and make a similar product and sell it, and there's no defense.
That's true.
Okay. I've heard, Bill, that dates are critical with patents. What kind of dates are critical?
Well, one I already alluded to. One is the disclosure date. If you disclose your invention you have to the public without protection, without non-disclosure agreement, you have 12 months to file. If you offer it for sale at a time when you, in your head, know what the invention is, it's offering for sale bar, and you have 12 months to file. You didn't disclose the invention, but you asked them how much would they pay for something that does this sort of thing.
Okay, so they have to do with the date of the invention, the date of the first filing, the date of public disclosure, and the date of marketing or use? Is that what you...
Well, there's one other thing. The date of first filing is also relevant. And the date of invention. When you conceive your invention and reduce it to practice, that starts a time where if someone else were to file before you, but you conceived your invention first and didn't abandon it in your efforts, you can still get a patent because the United States is first to invent. Overseas, it's first to file. If you were first to invent, but someone else filed first, they get the patent. So these dates are critical.
Overseas, is there a world patent?
No world patent. Patents are national rights, but there is a PCT treaty patent, it's a patent cooperation treaty, that allows you to file an application, argue, get a judgment of allowable, and then decide which countries you want to have it go on to.
So these are patent rights or
national?
National or country rights. Does the EU have an EU patent?
No, the EU has a patent process, a regional patent process, which you then register your patent in the countries you want to have covered.
Within the European Union?
Within the EPO, right.
Okay, so then basically you have to determine where am I going to sell this and wherever I'm going to sell my product, then I might want to go to that country and get a patent on it before I sell there.
Right. You want to only get patents in countries that have a big enough market where you can defend the patent. Defending patents cost up to $1 million or more in court costs. And so if you're making only $200,000 from a country, you shouldn't get a patent there because you couldn't defend it.
Bill, is there ever a time when a patent's not a good idea?
if you have an idea that is really cool, but it's very faddish and will last 2 years and then be out, don't waste your money. You won't have a patent issue for 4 years. You have no rights until 4 years. The best thing is to market it, sell it, get in, get out, and then save your money.
So if the life of a new product is 2 years or 3 years, just go in, hit it, get it done, and go away.
That right. explains why a lot of the technology software is not patented. Just the life cycle is like 3 years.
Too short, yeah. So just go do it.
That's true.
Now, what are our remedies? What if someone copies?
Software, now you raise the issue, is protected mostly by contract. That's why you have this lengthy user contract. I agree, then you use it.
Right.
Because that's the means for defending the software. Patents are irrelevant. They are too long.
Okay, now a business owner goes through this process, gets a patent, they're manufacturing the process. What if somebody copies their invention? What are the remedies?
The remedies are, unfortunately, court. And court's expensive. If you have a deep pocket competitor who is taking your invention and figures that he will outspend you and bankrupt you and you can't defend it, there are some big law firms that will take on your case if, according to their evidence, you have a solid patent and it was a solid infringement. Because they have, obviously, they're big and they will defend that and for a part of the take.
So they just do it on a contingent fee basis
right.
if they think it's winnable.
Right. But in typical, for a small inventor, if someone infringes, you're almost better off sometimes to just ignore it, because if you go to court, you might have your patent become invalid. And they say that copying is a sign that you're worth something. So because of the money, you may not do that.
Bill, any final thoughts for business owners if they're considering the patent process for something they've invented and they're using?
As soon as you have a patent, an idea that's reduced to practice that works, see a patent attorney. Learn what your options are, what the costs are, what your timing is, whether you can talk about this to somebody else or not, and what doors you may have opened or shut because of your discussions with other people.
Well, this is time-consuming, expensive, and the dates are important. The first date that that you think about this or create the invention is a very important date to make sure that you understand your rights and get started.
Yes, it is. The patents are very valuable, so it's worth doing.
Very much so. Bill, this has been very interesting, and we're out of time for this podcast. I'm Tom Lyons, here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and producer, Georgie Jorgensen. I'd like to thank Bill Berglund from the Berglund Law Office for being with us on this session of todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.